I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. I turn to documentary films. Part of my education many decades ago was documentary films had to be weighty topics, something to do with either the Second World War or the culture of the 60s in order to get a large audience. No more. I learned from Christian Toto, Real Clear Investigations, that documentary filmmakers do very well, thank you very much, not just Michael Moore, but a whole panoply of documentary filmmakers who now have the outlet of Netflix, Amazon Prime, and the other online sites that are coming up. However, Kristen has discovered in a new article that there is, in some fashion, resistance to documentary filmmakers who identify with one particular part of the partisan spectrum. This might connect to a story that Kristen has also published about online or social media stand-up comedians being, let's say, perused very carefully by a collective. And there's the mystery. Kristen, a very good evening to you. I cannot find a censorship central about documentary filmmakers, nor can I find a censorship central or a demonetizing central about online stand-up comedians, especially during the pandemic. Did I miss something? Is there one place, is there an address where they sit around smoking cigars saying you can make money and you can't? Good evening to you, Kristen.
Good evening. If only were that simple. Yeah, it might be easier to kind of suss out and figure out what to do next, but it's not that simple. It is across the culture. It often involves big technology, these massive platforms which have quite a sway over the cultural conversation. And there is a bit of consistency here. And it often isn't quite partisan. It could be sort of poking the bear, sort of being atypical, being an iconoclast, and not speaking to the sort of groupthink mentality. And if you're in that camp, there's a chance that you may be deplatformed, demonetized, or different variations thereof, where your voice isn't quite as strong as it once was.
We call it cancel culture, but that doesn't describe what you're investigating here, because these are extremely well-known political actors, Shelby Steele among them. But they're on other media, and yet when they've turned to documentary filmmaking, something happens. Now let's talk about the mechanics or the monetization of documentary films. It looks to me like you have to open out of town, meaning you have to open in a film festival to get noticed for a distributor. Is that the rules everybody plays by? Go to a film festival, win a prize, and a distributor will come in and make you rich.
That is traditionally how it happens. That's kind of the template that's been used over the years, where you get, you know, visibility, you get the good buzz, you get some positive reviews, and that'll kind of help you along your way. And like you said, you know, documentaries before Michael Moore were more obscure, they were more art house, but now because all these different platforms are right into our homes, it's a bustling kind of channel and conversation. So, you know, from that perspective, it's a great time to be a documentary filmmaker. But as you said, sometimes there are forces at work where it's not as easy to get to reach the public. There are some roadblocks along the way for particular storytellers, and that's what I discuss in the story.
Yeah, roadblocks. I think that's a generous metaphor, because we're talking about documentary films going up and being taken down, or going up and becoming extremely popular and yet still being in some way derided on social media. Now, is this about the election of 2020, or was this going on for years and we had no way of thinking about it as canceling?
Oh, you know, I think this has been going on for a while. I think that the recent events have been kind of rocket fuel for the particular movement we're talking about, whether it's President Trump, whether it's the January 6th Capitol incident, things like that. It seems, you know, I've been following this for a while, but it seems like the momentum in that we're discussing kind of increased exponentially in the last 12 months.
It is also true that there are a number of very successful documentary films. You mentioned several of them in your piece, but Michael Moore is extremely famous years ago. That was the Bush administration. Gosh, that was the 21st century, I think, but it feels like it was the 20th century. Doing very well because they have politics on the left. Or is that a generality that we can't make? You know, just because you have leftist politics doesn't mean you're going to make money.
Oh, no. There are lots of sort of films that are left of center that don't make any money. And for a variety of reasons. Listen, Hollywood is a brutal business. You don't know how you kind of ride the zeitgeist. Michael Moore happens to be a very engaging fellow. He puts his personality into it. A lot of his films are visually interesting. There's a sense of humor that's kind of puckish. So I think that he is able to kind of get more attention than most. But also, he's become a name and a brand. So that makes it easier for him to get out there, where he could be on the Today Show. He could be on all these different platforms. A new Michael Moore movie will get lots of publicity before anyone sees it. And other filmmakers don't have that.
Well, let's take one example that puzzles me in both directions. A documentary called No Safe Spaces. I have not seen it, but you bring it to my attention. And the cell line is, you have the right to remain silent. There's a picture of the Statue of Liberty with tape across the statue's face, not talking. It has a major star in it, I believe, Adam Carolla. What explains the inability of that particular filmmaker to get widely distributed or to win Netflix's attention?
Well, what he told me was, even though the film is not overtly political, right or left, it really is laser focused on free speech on college campuses. It was deemed a right of center film, in part because there are a lot of right of center voices. You've got Adam Carolla, Dennis Prager, Dave Rubin, although there are some left leaning voices too, including Van Jones. So while it's not an overtly Michael Moore kind of production, it was seen in the industry circles as being conservative, and that hurt. And the filmmaker also told me just having Dennis Prager's presence in the film was kind of a no-go for certain studios and certain people that maybe would give it a thumbs up.
That suggests that there's something more here than I can discern from just saying what politics you have. Is this about demographics, Christian? You know I'm an older person. And I can imagine that the millennials or Gen Z or even, you know, the Obamas are at the edge of boomers and Gen X. Is there some decision made by a generation about what is and what is not acceptable? And it doesn't have any rules. It's just everybody knows.
Well, it's interesting. I think the rules in this whole conversation are very murky. And that's interesting. I think demographically speaking, it could be a conservative like Ben Shapiro, who's in his 30s, or a Dennis Prager, who's in his 70s. I don't think that's the issue, but I do think the younger generation, this is a generality, but something I've noticed, and I think it's more true than not, are less excited about free speech, are more willing to say that hate speech is something that maybe shouldn't be allowed. It's kind of a cultural thing, and because the movie, this one, focuses on colleges, I think that's been the ground zero for this, but you know what happens at colleges? They graduate, they go into the real world, and they start getting positions of power, and they start making decisions that maybe people who are old school liberals don't like as far as free speech and free expression.
Yes, that's why I chose No Safe Spaces. It's about something that it would occur to me that it's about the First Amendment. And is there a controversy about the First Amendment? I guess there is, because your other observation is about stand-up comedians. And that is far more persuasive about censorship than the inability to make hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars as a documentary filmmaker. You document stand-up comedians who have been, I guess, driven out of the business or are finding themselves unable to get booking because of social media. So I'll ask the other question. Is this the rise of Twitter? Is this the rise of Facebook? Is that what's driving this, the ability to demonetize somebody by just being a troll?
Partly, yes. Listen, I've talked to comedians who will say, not only do I have people who don't like my work, but those people will actively go on social media and say, don't hire so-and-so because I think he or she is a white supremacist. And they'll tag a comedy club. The comedy club is where these people work. So if they get enough of those messages, or they kind of fear that they shouldn't hire someone like this, then maybe it could impact their employment future, for sure. I also think, just generally speaking, social media has really boosted the cancel culture sentiment, as far as people can share things quickly. It plays into outrage. You know, if you want to cut through the noise, you have to be louder. You have to be more outrageous. And, you know, being angry and surly and starting up a mob of people online is kind of what you do. It's part of the whole apparatus that we're looking at. It's why it could be so destructive.
The one part of stand-up comedy and documentary that I can connect with is the Babylon Bee. Kristen, you've got to help me understand how anybody could take the Babylon Bee as more than just humor. How is it that they are fact-checked? That itself seems like the Babylon Bee invented it.
That's a great point. Here's the thing, and this is my unofficial theory on comedy right now, specifically political comedy. When Tina Fey on Saturday Night Live imitated Sarah Palin, it was very successful. It was very funny. It was very clever. I think it really had an impact on how regular people saw Sarah Palin and also on sort of the political conversation. And I think a lot of comedians and even people who just look at comedy thought, gosh, we have power. We have clout. We can do things. We can kind of change the narrative with our work. And I think people maybe on the left, people maybe who don't want certain humor to be out there, they see the Babylon Bee as being very funny, very smart, and very effective at kind of poking in ways that aren't being poked across late night TV or Saturday Night Live. Because the Babylon Bee is so different, they stand out. Because they're so good, it helps them stand out even more. And I, you know, listen, this is very cynical, but I can't, as you said, I can't think of any other reason why you'd fact check a website which is obviously satirical and obviously cartoonish. Kristen, they just do it really well.
Kristen Toto for Real Clear Investigations. I'm John Batchelor.